Good morning. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning, Eunice. Good morning, Champagne, Urbana.
Okay. This is WEFT Champagne, 90.1 FM, streaming online at weft.org. And this is Higher Ground. And I am Eunice Buckner Boone.
And I am Robert Boone.
Oh, not Robert Buckner Boone? Okay.
Old Man Humphrey, Higher Ground. Higher Ground, think I can find us a better way of living now. Higher Ground.
The views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, Champaign, WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air, Incorporated, Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the WEFT Associates. Okay, Robert, 2 weeks have gone by and you're here.
Yes, again.
How fortunate to have you here again.
Yes, it is. It's been very interesting.
2 weeks, huh?
2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me read these announcements first, and then we'll do some reflection and get this done. Here's the lineup for the Art Theater for the week of Friday, July 1st, 2016, through Thursday, July 7th, 2016. Playing daily based on the Roald Dahl book is Steven Spielberg's The BFG, where a girl named Sophie encounters a big friendly giant, or BFG, who, despite his intimidating appearance, turns out to be a kind-hearted soul, but outcast by the other giants because, unlike them, he refuses to eat children. The enchanted animated story, Song of the Sea, concerns an Irish boy and his little sister who can turn into a seal. Together, they attempt to free fairies and save the spirit world. This will be the Smart Kids free screening on Saturday, July 2nd, at both 10 a.m. and noon. And finally, Orson Welles' filmoir, The Lady from Shanghai, starring the director's ex-wife, Rita Hayworth, will screen on July 1st and 2nd and on Thursday, July 7th, all at 10 p.m. For all current dates and times, you can go to www.arttheater.coop/full-schedule. CU bands and fans, along with Chorus and Music, will sponsor Original Artist Night number 16 at the Rose Bowl Tavern in downtown Urbana on Tuesday, July 12th. This is an event featuring original artists and their music, building a platform for Champaign and Urbana's original music scene. Donations will be accepted for CU bands and fans and for the performing artists. The concert will begin at 8 p.m. Call 217-367-7031 for more information. Okay. I would say, and today yoga in the park. So you have until 9 o'clock to prepare yourself to go to Yoga in the Park, which is every Saturday morning through August 27th at Meadowbrook Park in Urbana. And this is done outside, so bring your mat and enjoy yourself. Donations are accepted. And this is through the Urbana Park District. I think that's a nice thing they do. I'm not sure how many summers they've done that. The Champaign County Freedom Celebration will be taking place on July 3rd, 4th, and 5th. The celebration is run entirely by volunteers, and they are in need of more people to help with the 5K parade, parking, street barricades, and more. If you are interested in volunteering, go to july4th.net/volunteer. Okay, Robert. So, thinking about our lineup for today, I have Robert Boone with me. And as I said, I'm very thankful because we were able to invite one of our previous guests, and they will be calling in at 9 o'clock, Leah Bovedani, who is the author of the book Trusted: Secret Lessons from an Inspired Leader. And Leah Bovedani is an expert on trust, professional speaker, trainer, and coach who helps individuals and organizations build trust and trustworthiness. For 20 years, Leah has worked with companies and individuals across North America, Europe, and India, Indonesia, Africa, China, Singapore, improving leadership and teamwork. So one of the things that Robert liked about the last time, well, actually the first time Leah was on Higher Ground and he was with us as a co-host, and it was the idea of trust. And so I would say that our conversation today, or theme of Higher Ground today, would be
revolve around trust. Trust in ourselves, trust in our relationships, and our bigger relationship, trust in our community.
Yes. So trust is really essential to the self. If you don't trust yourself, there you lack this awareness.
Right. Of trusting others.
Right.
Your well-being, your overall outcome.
Yes, yes. And I would say that trust is really a major of a major importance, because when you think about what's in the news recently, what happened in the, I think the last time I was here, was that 2 weeks ago when that occurred? Did I mention it?
Ago, maybe 3 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. With the what happened in Orlando.
Right, right. And since then, we still continue to hear stories
about incidences all over the world about people killing each other.
And not only that, there's a concern that people have about, you know, what is the, where are we in terms of social context of life, civility, compassion? Do we care about each other? Do our politicians? Recently, we just saw in the newspaper yesterday that the state of Illinois finally passed, Governor Rauner passed a stopgap bill,
budget.
Mm-hmm. And they've been waiting on this budget for a while. So a lot of people have lost their jobs because there was no money for certain programs. And also schools, too, had to lay off staff. Eastern Illinois University, Chicago State. So a lot of these places will have now resources, money for that. But once again, there's that sense of, do we trust our life to care about us? And do we care? Can we care about other people if we don't trust? Life cares about us.
Mm-hmm. And trust influences our sense of well-being.
Yes.
How do you feel as a person in your home, where you work, or as you walk down the street? Do you feel well?
Mm-hmm. The other thing I was looking at was, and I like to play that, is a John Legend on TED Talks. I think I'll do that right away, and then we can go a little bit more into how trust will be weaved in our conversation. In fact, I think in every conversation we have, it really is about, do I trust what the person is saying to me? Mm-hmm. Do I trust the information? Do I trust the pointing? Someone is pointing you a certain way, a certain direction, a certain thought. Do I trust it? And how do I know to trust it? Well, first of all, you have to have a very awareness, not very awareness.
You have an increasing awareness.
Of yourself. Mm-hmm. And the notion of not going outside of yourself to trust yourself, but to trust yourself inward, and to know how to do that, or to even begin to realize that that ability to do that is already hardwired within you, but perhaps you have been steered away from that. So trust is so important, but also trusting our systems. John Legend's YouTube piece is about the prison systems and how people are in prisons, large masses of people in prison, but also how these persons who are now in prison are making a difference in their life while they're in prison, instead of looking at it as, I'm in this prison, I'm in this jail, that we can be in jail and imprisoned by our own thoughts. And how do you trust the self if you have thoughts that are constantly imprisoning you, making you feel like you have to shrink in order to fit in into thoughts or ideas that are not true for you? And a good example of that would be what they call the placebo effect. The placebo effect could work two ways. And one is they give you something and say, this is going to make you feel better, a pill. It's not really a pill that does anything, but it's a pill that someone gives you and says, here, you take this pill, you're going to feel better. I'm guaranteeing you. And then give you reasons why you should feel better, and maybe give you even proofs of people who have actually testified to the fact that they feel better because of it. Well, that could also have a reverse effect too, when you are told and labeled with a condition. or you're told, oh, your blood pressure is this, or your sugar is this, and you believe it, when there is no real, there's an average, right, in terms of what an individual
blood pressure is, and,
right,
and how it correlates with health,
right,
may be an issue as well. You know, I've seen a number of people who come in, they're concerned about, my blood pressure is high, and they're concerned, and they're, you know, very anxious. You can just see the anxiety, just radiating. You can feel the anxiety radiating. You can see the expression on their faces, you know, and their blood pressure may be indeed high. But in general, blood pressure isn't something we can sense. But the more anxious we get, the more our blood pressure increases. So we were talking about earlier.
Well, I was talking about the placebo. So how does that work? If someone tells you, is that what you're going to say? Okay.
That's how I'm going to approach that. Is that a long time ago, when we were running away from the tiger, or we were anxious about whether or not we were going to find food as food gatherers, our anxiety level will increase. So does our hormonal cortisol level will increase, which raises blood pressure and the pulse, and us and of a sense of danger. Now, how does this relate back? You know, we have a autoregulatory type of system that sort of fixes itself. So if it senses something not right, pain, or whatever, we raise our blood. It's necessary to raise our blood pressure, and we use it with various, as I mentioned, cortisol. Now, the placebo effect, you know, is a real thing. You know, it is real. So a person who believes, well, his cortisol level is going to drop. They're going to be more relaxed. The blood pressure is going to decrease. You tell a person that they have a disease, and they're going to be concerned about it. They're going to get more tense. That blood pressure is going to go up. So there's nothing unreal about it. It just shows us our believing has a big influence on how we behave within the world.
And that gets back to the placebo effect can have a positive in terms of letting someone know that you can get better, you will feel better, and that you want to be more aware of how you are feeling, not in a generality of based on a collective consciousness of what's being fed to you, what's being told to you, how you should feel, how you should look at this, because you can also be told you need this pill in order to feel better because your high blood pressure may have gone up because you see a doctor, because you see a nurse in a white outfit and you see a stethoscope or whatever. So trust is underlying everything. And if you trust yourself, which is really important, once again, it's about knowing the self. And what is the self? When you think about that, what is the self? Is the self ideas? Is the self accumulation of knowledge? Where is knowledge coming from? Who invented knowledge? How do we have knowledge? We are knowledge. Can that be so? And if that is so, then will the body tell us what it needs? And if we communicate in such a way where we say, the body and you will know, the self will know what it needs, then we will live in that consciousness or awareness, not based on fear, not based on, oh, what if I don't do this thing that I don't want to do? Or what if I don't do these things that that I hear that needs to be done? And really a big thing is, what's going to happen if Trump is president of the United States? And that being a major concern. In the newspaper yesterday, there was an article about the KKK, and it said there was a resurgence of the KKK. So what do you think your blood pressure did when you read that?
Mine went up.
Probably it did. And anxiety increased. The thing is that today we have lots of tigers in our workplace, tigers we were running from. You know, it says that when we run from, when they ran from the tiger, it actually decreased the blood pressure because the adrenaline went up.
It eventually goes up, but it comes down.
Exactly. Because you're running from that danger, right? So you have this built-in mechanism that says run from the tiger, all right? But now we have so many tigers, and the tiger is everywhere. So we're hearing about a variety of things. Black Lives Matter, we have signs for that. We've got signs for the political person we support. We've got the newspaper telling us, informing us, the news telling us how to look out for the weather, how to look out for the what's happening in some place that is, you know, something terrible happening, and you're concerned about your health care, your insurance, you're concerned about food, you're concerned about the environment. There's so many tigers now that our adrenaline is pumping, and that we don't trust that we can return or stay in the self, which is the self is saying, stay in awareness. Do not attach yourself to anything. Don't attach yourself to that notion of fear, or you can run from the tiger, but don't think about, oh, the tiger's going to be there tomorrow. Oh, the tiger's up ahead. Or what I'm going to do if the tiger is there. The tiger is there. It may be there, but don't get caught up in trying to
change the possibility.
Right.
You look at the possibilities rather than the now.
It says that if something...
You don't really see the tiger right now.
Right.
If you imagine
right.
the tiger's right around the bend,
right.
then you're going to do you're going to do certain things. Your body may react in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
You may even not go around the bend because of your fear. You might not limit your life because you're afraid
your movements.
Your movements mm-hmm. because you're afraid that there's a tiger right around the corner.
Right.
So you stay at home. You do things that are unhealthy.
Mm-hmm.
But if you just stop and say, right now, I'm in front of this nice tree or this pond and watching the fish swim around in it right now. This is what I see, and I enjoy this.
And whatever comes, whether you expect it, it says what you expect may not come, but what you don't expect will come.
Mm-hmm.
And we cannot prepare. And there's a sense, you like that one, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I heard that too.
mm-hmm.
But it's good, you know, because resurgence of the KKK, that means that the KKK never stopped being there, right?
No.
And so...
Whatever started...
Right.
That group of people.
Or the fear.
The idea
right.
is still there.
It's still there. It's still there.
Always been there.
And that's the thing. So how do we not get caught up in all these ideas that keep us running and trying to figure out and putting out fires when the fire is where? The fire is where? The fire is where?
It's in our mind.
Right. It's in our mind. Okay. So I'm going to play this because I think it's really important, because there are many different conversations going on now about incarceration. And but also this, again, I think is very good because it talks about personal responsibility, because one might think, I'm not in prison, I'm not in jail, or I'm not in this situation like the others are. That's not me. But in actuality, where you are, you could be in jail.
Mm-hmm.
You could be in prison. You could be in lockdown. And so there's a personal responsibility here, and that awareness of the self transcends all of these ideas and all this knowledge and all this information we're being fed that says, look out, do not look in. It's not about blaming, but it's about who are you? Whom are you? And why are you fully equipped and able and prepared? What makes you that way? You're already there.
Mm-hmm.
That which you are seeking is already here. Stop seeking. So much to talk about, but trust. Trust there is saying, what do I trust in? It says you have to trust whom?
So.
And what does that mean? to trust the self, because what's out here is this collective conscious mind that says we can't trust. You don't trust. You don't trust anything. And so our adrenaline is pumping and pumping and pumping. And we're trying to put out and run from these fires, imagined or real. Okay, so I'm going to play this legend. This redemption is really short. I think it's about 8 minutes long, but I think it's worthy. And then we're going to talk to Dr. Boone, too, some more about where are we in terms of our health, which is, again, how are we doing? How are we really doing? And how Robert and I are doing? We might even share some of that with you, too. Okay, so let me find this here. Tune up on this. Oh, yes, and after that, I'm going to do my underwriting announcement.
Okay.
In learning tour, we visited not only with prosecutors, but with legislators, with inmates in our state and local prisons. We've gone to immigration detention centers. We've met a lot of people. And we've seen that redemption and transformation can happen in our prisons, our jails, and our immigration detention centers, giving hope to those who want to create a better life after serving their time. Imagine if we also considered the front end of this prison pipeline. What would it look like if we intervened with rehabilitation as a core value, with love and compassion as core values? We would have a society that is safer, healthier, and worthy of raising our children in. I want to introduce you to James Cavett. James served 12 years in the San Quentin State Prison and is being released in 18 months. Now, James, like you and me, is more than the worst thing he's done. He is a father, a husband, a son, a poet. He committed a crime, is paying his debt, and working hard to build the skills to make the transition back to a productive life when he enters the civilian population again. Now, James, like millions of people behind bars, is an example of what happens if we believe that our failings don't define who we are, that we are all worthy of redemption, and if we support those impacted by mass incarceration, we can all heal together. I'd like to introduce you to James right now, and he's going to share his journey of redemption through spoken word.
Thanks, John. Ted, welcome to San Quentin. The talent is abundant behind prison walls. Future software engineers, entrepreneurs, craftsmen, musicians, and artists. This piece is inspired by all of the hard work that men and women are doing on the inside to create better lives and futures for themselves after they serve their time. This piece is entitled, Where I Live. I live in a world where most people are too afraid to go. Surrounded by tall concrete walls, steel bars where razor wire have a way of cutting away at the hopes for a brighter tomorrow. I live in a world that kill people who kill people in order to teach people that killing people is wrong. Imagine that. Better yet, imagine a world where healed people helped hurt people heal and become strong. Maybe then we would all be singing redemption song. I live in a world that has been called hell on earth by those trapped inside. But I've come to the stark realization that prison, it really is what you make it. You see, in spite of the harshness of my reality, there is a silver lining. I knew that my freedom was gonna come. It was just a matter of time. And so I treated my first steps as if they were my last mile. And I realized that you don't have to be free in order to experience freedom. And just because you're free doesn't mean that you have freedom. Many of us for years have been battling our inner demons. We walk around smiling when inside we're really screaming, freedom! Don't you get it? We're all serving time. We're just in different places. As for me, I choose to be free from the prisons I've created. The key, forgiveness. Actions, my witness. If we want freedom, then we gotta think different. Because freedom, it isn't a place. It's a mind setting. Thank you.
Yes, they rob I, sold I to the merchant ships. Minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit, but my hands were made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever had, redemption songs, redemption songs. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever had, redemption songs, redemption songs. Mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop the tide. How long shall they kill our prophets when we stand aside and look? Some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever had, redemption songs, redemption songs. These songs of freedom, 'cause all I ever had, redemption songs, redemption songs, redemption songs.
Thank you. Thank you.
That was John Legend and Redemption Song. This underwriting announcement, please, I need to do. Elliott Counseling Group has 35 counselors providing mental health services for individuals, families, couples, children, and groups. Evening and weekend appointments are often available immediately. Virtually all insurance, including state employee insurance, is accepted. There is also a self-pay sliding scale. You can contact Kevin Elliott or his staff at ElliottCounselingGroup.com. That is E-L-L-I-O-T-T, CounselingGroup.com, or 217-398-9066. So
we're last thing we were discussing
mm-hmm.
a little while ago was something about the placebo effect. And I just got a bit of inspiration. Just listening to John Legend singing, music can also have I'm not even sure I want to say healing effect, but I think it has a sense of providing us with a sense of well-being. You know, when a song that touches your heart, that says things that are inspiring and comforting, you know, this provides us with this sense of well-being. Probably drops our cortisol level and our heart rate drops and our blood pressure drops. And, you know, what matters is now, the now matters because the music captures us into a moment.
Mm-hmm.
So I really appreciate the song.
Yeah, I did too. And, you know, the spoken word prior to that where he talked about the prison in our minds, and we're always talking about being free, but we're not in jail, we're not in any kind of you know, but we're always talking about freedom to be.
Yeah, jail mm-hmm. isn't just a building,
right? Mm-hmm.
It's
exactly
a state of mind.
Mm-hmm.
When you build a prison, you know, like this, like the that movie, you know, people will come. Sometimes you look for people to put into the building. You change policies in order to fit the building. You do things that causes this institution to be filled to capacity. Now, we can also do things that changes that. We can change our personal beliefs, and I can walk past it and not think about it, or I can enjoy my time in the now. I can be momentary kind of a person. I can feel at wellness. I can also do the opposite. It's like Eunice was implying earlier that if you think this pill is going to make you sick, it will. You will feel sick. So our mind, you know, every patient say, oh, you just think this is all in my head. Hey, yeah. Indirectly, I'm not being condescending or minimizing your complaints, but what we feel is what's in your head. You know, you have to you have to perceive. You know, we have a nervous system that tells us that there is something wrong. You break a leg, there's pain sensors that tells us that there's something wrong and it needs to be corrected. You have to stay off of it. You have to put a cast on it and so forth. But in order for us to know that limb is broken, we have to perceive it and evaluate, do a self-evaluation as to what's going on. But many times within our existence, we perceive what possibly could happen, rather than what is really happening.
So maybe, should we say it's wrong, or there's something that's now getting our attention in another way?
Yeah.
Because I'm concerned about that, you know, how we...
Yeah, and I thought about it when I said it, too, mm-hmm. about when I said wrong.
Mm-hmm. But that's easy for us to say.
That's probably a different word.
It probably is.
You know,
but...
And that word may not describe it
mm-hmm.
to the... infinite degree that mm-hmm. we might feel.
Mm-hmm. It won't.
But we
guaranteed.
We do. That's true. But right now, right here,
mm-hmm.
without glamorizing or denigrating something, it is. And that should be appreciated. You know, life I've learned to respect and honor, you know, where I didn't respect and honor it before. You know, it's something, you know, that is a momentary place that I'm in right now, and it could be, I can enjoy it. That's what I'm telling myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, saying, yes, it is. Yes, I am.
Mm-hmm. Not, yes, I am this or yes, I am that. Because... Let's look at this. I have to ask you a question here, Dr. Boone, Robert Boone. Life expectancy in the U.S. has dropped since 1993, for the first time since 1993. Now, why is that? I think, you know, when you think about it, we're more advanced, more everything. And yet we still talk about being in prison, or we talk about being free, and we still talk about violence and all these other things, which kind of would make life expectancy not so good. But we're still in a future as opposed to being now where we were before. Mm-hmm. So now we're here. And where are we? What is our health? What's going on with our health?
Well, I brought this up. I saw this article in the news a few weeks ago, and it kind of caught my attention. You know, one, which is why did the life expectancy, and what we're talking about here, what I'm talking about here, is that the life expectancy at birth of a child born today is less than it's been since 1993. I mean, there's been a decrease. It shouldn't have been a decrease. It's a decrease by actually 36.5 days. Not you say that's not that much, no big deal, except for if it's you. And the and just as Eunice was saying, with all the technology, with all the pharmacology, with all the things that we have, why is it decreasing? Actually, there's no answer. The life expectancy has decreased in some populations, actually primarily the white population or the Caucasian population has decreased. It has actually increased for the first time in the black males to 70 years. You know, you might say, great for black people, except for one thing. There's still a discrepancy between the two. Instead of 77 years, the general population, which has dropped, you know, the black male population, the life expectancy at birth is 70. There's a 7-year difference. So there is still a discrepancy there. But still the question is, and this article could not explain why there was a discrepancy, even though there's been some increase in life expectancy among specific groups, and even infant mortality has declined. So there's something else going on. It could be violence in certain population groups. It could be due to suicides, mental kind of issues that's been going on. There has been an increase in suicides. So why does it matter in the long run? Since if life goes on, the expectancy that we're talking about here is a life in this human form for this personality called Robert, based upon certain data that's been accumulated over so many years. Now, as we were also mentioning earlier, that could cause illness in itself, just this article. Because when I heard it, I felt a sense of demise. I felt, oh boy, you know. So that changed my outlook on life, on my life primarily, and those that I love. It changed that. So I'm wondering, you know, what's going on? You know, there are many things that are going on, but I'm concerned that there's been a change. So that's making me feel ill. So illness is a state of mind as much. And I'm still thinking around the bend, around the corner, that there's a tiger that's waiting for me, a tiger called end of life. Rather than enjoying my time right now, right here, you know, in front of this microphone, in front of my wife, you know, I'm not there. So I'm not appreciating what I have. I think, just as a side note, people become anxious because they fear that they're going to die. And just to say that in a different way is because they're not experiencing and enjoying life right now. So if we can bring ourselves back into self, our essence, we can appreciate and enjoy life, and then as it passes, we go along moment by moment. You know, death is a place of that we have no idea what it's like, but we know it's not conscious of you know, we're not conscious of anything during that evolution to whatever it is. We, at least as far as we can, people can communicate. No one's ever talked to us who has passed away, so we don't know. But so it's the consciousness we're talking about. Is the living person's awareness of this, this state of mind,
which may continue beyond the body itself.
But the living are not aware of it.
Well, and maybe, you know, I mean, you think about, and what you're saying is that because we don't talk about it in that manner, we talk about end of life, end of body.
Mm-hmm.
But as you said, we're more in terms of our awareness of many things, just like we're aware of many things, the wind, and we're aware that life continues even after a body dies, that there's this continual rebirthing, right?
Yes.
And there's these continual changes and seasons change and this continuation of the life force. So we know that the life force itself does not die, but we focus on this life body, this body being, this is what I must take care of. This is what I must, you know, sustain the memory of the body, the memory of who I was and all of that afterwards. But yet our conversations are not about the body only. They really are not. When we're thinking, okay, what unites us? What do we want to see? What is it that we think deep down in our heart? What are these things we struggle with or fights that we're having within ourselves? What do we want to improve upon, change? One of the things you talk about, and it's just interesting, this thing about, you know, our life expectancy is decreasing, all right? We have the Affordable Care Act now, right?
Yes.
And that was to improve upon preventable illnesses, is correct?
Correct.
What is it about that that gets in the way of this idea that was started, said we compassionately, or was it built out of compassion? What is changing? What hasn't changed? Which is why the life expectancy is not improving, because they said more technology, more information, more data, more pharmacology, but it's not improving life, extending life, maybe prolonging it. I don't know.
I'm not sure either. You know, to answer your question, you know, with the Affordable Care Act, you know, the intent was to provide something that was actually initiated actually about 20 some years ago when Hillary Clinton proposed universal health care. That was poo-pooed and said it was a waste of time. But for people who have no insurance, a few years ago, you know, it was noted that there were 50-some million people uninsured in this country, with 45,000 people dying each year from lack of health care, which means that by lack of health care, that they were dying of, they had diseases that could have been treated early, even prevented, or treated, but they weren't. And so these people died unnecessarily. So there was a big mention of that, I mean, a lot of mention of that, I should say, in different arenas, you know, American College of Physicians, you know, it's an internal medicine group. The Physicians of the National Health Insurance is another group. You know, even this particular one called Healthy People 2000, then there was a Healthy People 2010, then there was now Healthy People 2000, 2020. You can look up the site. It's www.healthypeople.gov. And here was this, what we don't have, when we look at healthcare in the U.S., perhaps even beyond that, overall plan is what do we intend? What would be considered healthy? Someone has to look at an overall plan. It's not an individual, even though we do have personal responsibility to our own health. But it has to also be a mindset that's universal, a mindset that says every life is important, is a contributor to the overall well-being of our community, our state, our nations. So though there is improvement in life expectancy, there's not been a lot of improvement in well-being.
That's an interesting statement. I mean, I would say that makes a lot of sense, because we're always talking about long life, but are we talking about well-being, a sense of well-being?
Yeah. It's because we define health as a lack of disease, rather than being a place of wanting to be.
Wow. And I was listening to something, and look at the time over there for me, please. Just give me a gauge of that. But it said something about our health. It says, it's just along that line. I have to share that. Good health is enthusiasm to work, enthusiasm to become, enthusiasm to be compassionate.
Beautiful. Yes. You know, and so with that in mind, our state of right now improves.
It would improve.
You know, without this major concern about what I did yesterday that was bad, and I feel guilty and shame about it, to the anxiety of, wow, you know, what's going to happen to me tomorrow? You know, how am I going to, you know, pay this bill tomorrow? How am I going to have a relationship tomorrow, when today I'm ignoring my relationship with self?
But how can I know that if this is where we're constantly conversing away from that, and it's from this needing to get something, an Affordable Care Act, which when it became Affordable Care Act, it was not affordable for many people.
It still isn't.
This is what I'm saying, Robert.
It still isn't. There has to be a plan. Is it Healthy People 2020, maybe it'd be 2030. Before long, because there has to be a plan. There has to be overall sense that every person is vital to the essence.
But how is that going to happen? It has to be every being.
It has
needs to understand the self.
Every being, and it's like a virus, I think.
A virus.
Sometimes we think of viruses, we think of something really bad. But viruses,
viral.
Viral. We think of maybe another word. A viral thing is that it's something that's contagious. It's a set of life instructions. That's what a virus is.
But maybe it's already. But the virus is already in the body, right?
The virus already exists.
It's in the body, right?
Right.
Okay.
So, what we do is incorporate this within ourselves.
Now, incorporate means to come out in the end.
Yeah, in.
Is it already
no,
in there?
It's already in there. We have to recognize
that
it's there.
It's real.
We have to recognize that it's there. And as we radiate going the other way from the inside out, it's going to infect, you know, in a viral way, people that we associate with, that we contact, we're in contact with. And they will also, you know, recognize there's still, it's a recognition of self, you know, they'll recognize their self.
Is that enough? Is that enough? Right now, is that enough?
You know, right now, that's what we intend.
But is that enough?
We have to have a public policy of sharing this information. We have to have a public policy of seeing it, you can acknowledge this. You can be educated in a sense about these things. There's a public policy that says that what will be provided you is insight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to share my insight. I'm going to share mine, mm-hmm. and you share yours. And mm-hmm. so there, it, as it passes, we have to say our primary goal is to manifest good health, period.
So, okay, so Dr. Boone, how many minutes you got up here before our caller calls
Three
in?
3 minutes.
Leah
Bobadani.
My question for you is, yes. How do you do that? How do you do that today? How do you start today? Because once again, it says back to the self. Mm-hmm. How do you start that today? And if you have already started it, what are you doing?
Self-examination.
And what is that?
And then I look at my mind, I look at my heart,
mm-hmm.
I look at my intents.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it goes with mine.
Mm-hmm. It's all
the same,
mm-hmm.
you know, and honoring that.
Yeah.
You know? And then I'll say, I honor you, Eunice. I honor your body. I honor your mind.
You show me that.
I will show you that.
Mm-hmm. And so I know it's oversimplification, but this is why we spend a lot of time, I think, Robert, talking about many, 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 many things and many, 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 many problems. Because we are saying what you're saying, but then we're saying it.
Mm-hmm.
We're saying it. Saying it is not being it.
Yeah.
It's not recognizing the reality of it, that we are focusing on a life later, the life better, the life that's going to come, when the life that we already are is here right now, and that which we seek is right here right now.
Right.
And it doesn't require a lot of effort. Mm-hmm. And if effort is required, effort will be provided. It will rise up for us. And mm-hmm. when it's effortless, that will rise too.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't trust that. And trust is everything.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you defined intimacy mm-hmm. the other day. How did you say
that? Into me, you see? Oh, our caller is calling in now. So we got to answer the phone. Hi, Leah.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Whew.
How are you guys?
Oh, we're doing
well.
Fine. This is not Leah. This is Marilyn.
Yes,
hi, Marilyn.
We got another caller.
Boy, I have enjoyed your program this morning. The spoken word was just dynamite. It just and the song just touched my heart, just like Robert said.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have a lot of interesting things on there this morning. I haven't been listening to you because I didn't have a radio.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a radio, and I'm glad
Very good.
I tuned in to you guys this morning. And
I'm glad I was able to answer the phone. And I was glad I was able to answer the phone because I used to didn't know how to answer the phone.
I've been calling since 8:30.
Oh, I haven't noticed it.
I know.
Oh, gosh.
I called twice, and I said, well, maybe it's at 9 o'clock.
Oh, it's because I had a guest at 9 o'clock. I have a guest calling in at 9 o'clock, and that's why I was looking over there at 9.
Okay. Well, listen, I won't keep you. I just wanted to
Marilyn.
You guys know that I'm really enjoying your program, and that spoken word was just
touched you.
It was something, and like I say, the song was really great, and it touched my heart as
Robert
was saying, it's mm-hmm. a song that took you into that realm
mm-hmm.
for just a minute or two.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, you guys have a great day and a great morning and a great afternoon and a great night.
Yes, you too.
And you guys was blessed yesterday, you're blessed today, and tomorrow you'll be blessed with unseen blessings.
So thank you so much, Marilyn.
Day, okay?
You too.
Love you, little princess.
Thanks, Marilyn, Cleveland.
All right.
Take
care,
Robert. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Okay.
Little princess.
All righty. Now, Leah, it's 217-359-5483. Leah's going to call in, and we're going to answer her call. Wow.
But as we were mentioning, talking about intimacy,
mm-hmm.
as I see me, I see you, once I recognize that self
mm-hmm.
is a quality of everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And
Leah's calling in now. Hello, Leah.
Hi, Eunice. How are you?
I'm fine, Leah Bovadani.
Well, you know, I was looking at the time. I just got off the river, so I was still kind of in that mode, and I called you an hour earlier thinking that I should have checked to make sure that it wasn't Central Time.
Oh, ooh. Everything is, you know, it's interesting, Leah, as I was saying to Robert about something I heard, and it makes sense, and that is effort will come when effort is needed, and effortlessness will come when effortlessness is needed.
Oh, I like that.
And oftentimes we're always thinking about what we have to do in order to bring about that which we already are. And
oh,
that which
I
is
like that too. That's very good.
And when I think about trust, and Robert was the one who said, when are you going to have that lady back on again? About
well,
trust.
Well, thank Robert for me.
Because, you're welcome. I'm here.
Because it
oh,
was,
hi, Robert.
Yeah.
Good morning.
That's why I got in contact with you, too. Of course, I needed a guest, but I also wanted to invite Robert to be with me because sometimes he's not available on the times when I'm here. And so I wanted him to be here so that the next time when I invited you, he would be here because he thought trust was so essential. It was like something he felt was important that he needed to pay more attention to. Right, Robert?
I really do. I think, you know, in the field I work in, that most of the conditions we have relate to, say, an absence of trust, and most of the healing that we have is based upon trust. You know, trust in, you know, let's say a physician, trust in self, trust in that in the now will be here now. And
yeah,
we need not worry about the future or fret about the past. We can have a sense of well-being right now when we trust that right now is it.
Yeah, and trust is both a feeling and an action. I mean, I think that we have that feeling of trust, but it's also something that we can give somebody else. It's an action that we can give people.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Your definition of trust is, you know it offhand, correct? The
right.
Definition
your
that you provide in your book.
Yeah, your ability to be vulnerable based on those positive expectations or feelings that you have about another person or a mm-hmm. or company. So it's you have to be open and vulnerable. So I say respect is a backward-looking feeling. So you respect someone because you've got the experience. So it's all things that have happened. Or trust is forward. It is something that you have an expectation going forward.
Mm-hmm.
So break that down a little bit more, because you're saying expectation going forward. What is that?
Well, you know, trust is a lot of times we trust someone, obviously, on the respect to the past history we've had with them. But really, when you trust somebody, it is what your expectation of you have of them in the future.
Yes.
So it is a forward-thinking feeling rather than looking backward. And it's that when you're looking back, it's the memories that you have of past expectations. And a lot of times we will trust based on that. But really, when you give someone trust, it is something that you're expecting in the future.
Mm-hmm.
It's that positive expectation that you have.
And
so
this vulnerability is what? What are you vulnerable to? What is the vulnerability you speak of in that trust definition?
When it's opening yourself up. When you trust, there's this openness. I mean, it's really easy to say, well, I'm not going to trust anybody anymore because I've been hurt. Or they've done something that that I didn't like, or they've betrayed me. You know, those are all the feelings that we have. And so in order to trust, especially when you look at a relationship, and I have friends who have been betrayed in the past, and so going forward, they don't want to be vulnerable, and that's logical. I mean, part of the reason that I got really involved with trust is I was someone who trusted too much, I believe. I had to learn when do you trust and when do you can still be friendly, you can still have a great time, but to open up your heart to somebody and to open up your home, you have to be smart about trust. So it's knowing when to be vulnerable, how to be vulnerable, based on the positive expectations that you have.
That sounds more like a definition for a business relationship. For some reason, because I feel, Leah, and this is Leah Bobadani, wrote the book, author of Trusted Secret Lessons from an Inspired Leader. And I did do your bio already on the first hour, so we wouldn't spend time doing that.
Okay.
But that sounds like a definition for a business arrangement. Because as I'm reading about the character, what's his name?
Hunter,
yes. Hunter had this experience, and his experience led him to not trust, to be vulnerable, you know. And in a relationship, to me, you're vulnerable all the time. I cannot think of a time, and this is the truth, not only in a relationship, I feel that I am vulnerable all the time. This is how I feel. Like, okay. There's no such thing as not being vulnerable, Eunice. Mm-hmm. And literally, I don't, you know, it's like real.
Okay.
So mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit more about that when you say you're vulnerable all the time.
Okay. And this is real. And yet I don't see it as a weakness. I see it as a strength. Totally. And Brene Brown did a thing. She did a thing on vulnerability. And this is way before her. And this is why I think even trust is way before the word trust. The fact that I am exposed to everything.
Yeah.
You know, elements, was this physical,
mental,
whatever, emotional, whatever it is, I am exposed to a very influential environment because I exist within that as a body and as an entity, as a perceived person based on my physical appearance, based on people's perceptions and society's constructs, cultural, all these things. I feel extremely exposed to these perceptions. Now, those perceptions are perceptions, but those perceptions can be influenced whether or not that person, like in Hunter's case and Stan's case, was Susan going to give Hunter a chance based on his assessments that we're taking about that the HR person decided, no, I don't think he's a good hire, but Susan thought he was.
Yeah, she trusted her gut, really.
Yes.
She trusted her instinct.
Right. And Stanley, whom Hunter did not trust.
Yeah.
Okay, so these are things that we are constantly exposed to, different perceptions, what people's past and present experiences are and all of that. I feel very exposed and vulnerable. And that is so obvious to me in my relationship with Robert because he is my first exposure in my awakened state. When I wake up from sleep, Robert is there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's like after me comes Robert. You know, and I feel very exposed. And no matter what we've experienced in our relationship, there's no way I can protect myself or, you know, and be smart with trust. I think I understand what you're talking about, smart trust. But then even then, it feels like it's more like a business arrangement.
And yeah, I might see it a little differently.
Okay,
and
so
I
let's
love
talk
Brene
about
Brown.
That. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So for Brene Brown, and so anyone who doesn't know who she is, and she's a sociologist at the university in Texas,
mm-hmm.
and I'm trying to remember the university, but she says vulnerability sounds like truth and feels like courage.
Mm.
And truth and courage can be frightening, but they're never a weakness. They're always a strength. And I absolutely believe that, that when you're vulnerable, it takes a lot of strength to open yourself. But I still believe that there is, and I did emotional intelligence for years, there's IQ and EQ, and they are a combination of the both that shows your potential and allows you to go through life really smart. Because I think if you just rely on one or just rely on the other, you're not using all of the strengths that we have. So with trust, when I talk about being smart about trust, you trust Robert. You also know him really well. And I just from our brief time of knowing each other, I think that you've got a lot of intuitive strength. When mm-hmm. you meet somebody, mm-hmm. it's not that you're rude to them, you're always really pleasant to them, but I would bet that if you met someone who you just had that, you know, your stomach just doesn't feel right when you're with them, and your heart doesn't feel right when you're with them, and you just get that sense, you can trust them to a point. You know how far you can trust them. But it might not be a person that you decide to invite into your home.
Yes.
So even with trust on a heart level, you meet somebody. And I just spent a week on the river, whitewater rafting with a group of people. And you really have to trust your guides, because we went through some really wonderful whitewater rapids. And you're spending a week with a lot of people that you don't know. At the end of the week, I can tell you that there were people that I knew from my experience with them on the river, that these are people that I would invite into my home, I would trust them. And there were other people, had a great time with them, had some interesting conversations, I wouldn't put into that category. I didn't feel the same way. I didn't trust them in the same way. I wouldn't trust them with my heart.
How did you trust Hunter? Why did you trust Hunter with your heart? Because it seems like in the book, you must have, Susan trusted Hunter with her heart. And why did she do that?
Well, there was a couple of things.
What was it about Hunter?
Even when he messed up quite a lot, and part of it was he messed up because he believed that he had this responsibility to move the company forward. So he shut down his instincts and did a bunch of things based on a lot of fear. So it was the fear that the business was going to go under that made him make some really bad decisions. But when, you know, one of the things that I wanted to give people when they were reading the book is that when he had to say goodbye to everybody at the company, he sat down with every single one of his employees and mm-hmm. apologized to them. He opened up his heart. He trusted himself and them enough to know that he was going to really open himself up and be vulnerable. So I wanted to show that even though he was a bit of a screw up in the business, he still had a good heart, but that was shut for a while. Mm-hmm. So what Susan gave Hunter was the ability to get back to who he was, which she saw that at his core, he was a really good person.
Mm-hmm. You know, let me ask you a question, Leah. You know, it seems to be that the lack of trust, you know, and I find it a personality trait myself and men in general, that, you know, the trust to seek out, just like he had the opportunity before he signed that contract to have a week, you know, that he could have talked to other people about it and really got more insight and not make that decision, perhaps.
Yeah.
But because he didn't trust at the moment. And he thought that if this guy walked out the door, he would not have an opportunity. I'm going to do it right now. I'm going to make this decision right now, because I can't trust that this moment will ever occur again. Or this moment I won't be able to control. This moment, this having these 150,000 pieces of whatever they had there, I can't remember exactly. But he couldn't trust. So how do men in general, myself, get out of the spirit where, even though the moment is where I'm at right now, you know, I can trust that there will be another moment?
Part of it is really being aware of how we're feeling. So Hunter was feeling fear, and fear is the opposite of trust. You know, distrust isn't the opposite of trust. Fear is the opposite of trust. And a lot of times, when we're in that state of fear, we're not open to it. And so if he would have just stopped for a minute and figured out exactly how he was feeling and then bring in some intelligence. You know, the guy gave me a week.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He had a week.
Let's take the week and not let fear, and it was the fear about not being able to make payroll. It was the fear about maybe not having all of the skills that he needed to have to run the business. Because for those who haven't read the book, Hunter was had to take over his uncle's business before he was ready, because his uncle died suddenly. So he was being groomed to eventually take over, and then was plunged into this position of having to take over a company and figure out how to run it. So there was a lot of fear about his own ability and fear that he was going to run the business into the ground. So he was operating from a place of fear. Mm-hmm. And if you can control that and just breathe through it, and I think that women, we're taught that it's okay if we're afraid and we can work through it. Whereas, I don't know about you, Robert, but, mm-hmm. you know, even you're taught that fear is a weakness. And it's not. It's an emotion, and it's telling you something. And you just have to sit with it for a minute and figure out what it's telling you and then make the right decision. So fear is a really handy emotion to feel. It's just respecting it. And then
okay.
So
what is it telling me? And then using it.
So Stan, whom was a military,
yeah.
Had been in the military, in the context of a civilian job and being married with a wife who had a cancer, right?
Right.
This
and he taught.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry, Eunice.
No, you go ahead, please.
I did a lot of training in the for the military. So I did emotional intelligence courses, and this was up in Canada. I taught emotional intelligence to the Department of National Defense, and it was about, you know, being able to recognize emotions and use them effectively. And what I used to hear from them is that, you know, emotions were something that you parked at the door as soon as you walked onto your job.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was getting them to be respectful and saying, no, they give you information. Respect the information that they're giving you. Don't ignore it. And then sit with it and decide how you're going to use that, because every emotion that you feel, it doesn't mean that you have to be in this state of fear. It's just, what is it telling me?
Those are good inquiry questions, but Stan could not ask those questions in the military.
No, he was told park them at the door, and that was what he was doing at the office. So he was coming in. His wife had a debilitating illness, and rather than finding someone and sharing it and saying, you know, listen, I'm distracted, I'm worried, a lot of my thoughts are on my wife right now. If he would have disclosed any of that, they would have been able to work with him. But he, you know, I park my emotions at the door, I don't bring them into work. And so his work was, sometimes it was really great, sometimes it was a real mess. Because we can't separate, emotions are part of who we are. And even with the guys in the military, and I talked to some brilliant, brilliant men, the ones that were the great leaders were the ones who were aware of how they felt. And then they could deal with it. Okay, this is what I'm feeling. What is it telling me? And then, okay, at this point, I'm going to park that feeling for a minute because it's not helpful, but I'm aware that it's there. So it's not that you just say, okay, you know, there was one fellow in particular that I was amazed, because he did a lot of everything from deep diving to, and I'm trying to remember the term, special ops, that was it. He was special ops, and so some of the stuff that he did was amazing. And I watched him and hooked him up, had him hooked up to a machine that was measuring his heart rate, had him watch a movie that everybody else was, their heart rates were all over. So we got his heart rate up, and then pretty quickly he was able to control his physiology, get his heart rate at a really steady pace, and just manage his emotions. So they're taught to do that, but he told me that they're always aware when they go into it how they feel. And then they manage their emotions.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting.
Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. It makes sense, because I was reading this article in Guideposts, and it was about this man whose daughter, he'd already died, but his daughter had learned some things about her dad after his death. It was a story that was told to her about what her dad did when he was captured. He was in the American Army during what's that called? Hitler?
In World War II.
World War II, whatever that, whatever war that was. Anyway, and so they said when they were in the concentration camp, and it was over 1,000 soldiers, American soldiers, that had been captured. They said, we want the Jews, who were Jewish American soldiers, we want them to come out in the morning, only them. And since he was the highest ranking officer, he made the decision that everybody was going out when they called. And so everybody went out. And so this was not what they expected. They said, you all aren't Jews, right? And we just want the Jews. And he says, I only have to give you my name, rank, and serial number. And he had a gun to his head telling him, this is what you have to do. And then he went on to tell him about the Geneva Convention, et cetera, et cetera. And you will be tried when we win this war, you will be tried for war crimes. But we only have to give you our name, rank, and serial number.
Wow.
That to me is someone who says, no matter what I'm here doing, and this is not a judgment because I can judge and say, you know, years ago, you know, why do people go to war? Why do people fight? I don't ask that question anymore because I understand why we do many things. I do many things that, oh, why did you do that? All right. But in there's this awareness that I know he must have had because this was something he did anyway. He would do it whether he was in that situation or out of that situation, as if he would do this in your book, a body scan or scan of who his principles are,
yeah,
his values, who itself, his intrinsic core self, that would come to rise. It would not be a suppression of all of those things, of what the emotions are. Like you're saying, they're there to show us something. They're there to communicate. Most of us are not encouraged to look and inquire about how we're feeling about something. We've just oftentimes are reacting or responding to something in a way that is not even thoughtful in terms of our heart thoughts, our intuitive thought. It's just, what do I need to do in this particular instance? And how do I prepare myself for the next? It's not spontaneous.
Yeah, you know, and parents with the very best meaning shut down kids' emotions sometimes because if a child is sad, rather than acknowledging it and saying, you're really sad right now, they'll say, oh, it's nothing, you know, sweetheart, don't be sad. So what you're saying is, don't feel like you're feeling. And so if you can just be aware and just say you're really sad and then let them talk about it and then reframe. But the first thing that you do is acknowledge how someone is feeling, not label it bad or good or whatever. You know, I don't know if anyone else had parents like this brought up in a certain time, but if I was crying, I remember my dad turning around and saying, stop your crying or I'll give you something to cry about.
Oh, yes.
Did you ever hear that?
I've heard it. It may even have said it.
Yeah, you know, so you teach, and so instead of saying, you know, what you hear as a child is your reason for crying isn't really valid, but if I hit you, it's valid.
Wow.
Which, mm-hmm. when you think about it that way, it's kind of bad. But really, what I wanted to convey in this is that trust your emotions and trust your intelligence and put them together, and your outcomes will be a lot better.
That's what we're talking about today, too, is how do we, I want to say outcomes, but how do we not focus on outcome as more as think about our income? Like, how am I doing in here? And not think about, okay, if I do this, you know, I can see as I'm thinking about the characters in your book. Trusted, Secret Lessons from an Inspired Leader, Stan, Susan, and Hunter. Mm-hmm. One of the things that Susan did was that there was this component that seemed to be not invited in, but yet it was very much so within the circle of this company, was that people said people were trusted there, or,
yeah,
you know, so it was in there already. And in this company, it was identified, or not, I don't even want to use identified, but it was part of the company itself. It was not apart from it.
Yeah.
But when,
and, you know, mm-hmm. trusted to make mistakes too, because being yeah. human means that we're going to mess up.
Mm-hmm.
And if you use mistakes even as an opportunity for learning and growth, because if you don't, and this makes sense,
mm-hmm.
if you punish every person who makes a mistake, they're going to start hiding them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yes. if they can't, if they're completely incompetent, so one of the things is I give a 5C, so caring, commitment, consistency, confidence, and communication. So confidence is definitely in the 5 C's of trust.
Mm.
If someone continuously messes up, then maybe they're in the wrong position.
Mm-hmm.
But if they, if you make a mistake, then you use it as an opportunity to learn. And that's in life, too, because, you know, you and Robert have been together for a number of years, and if you've never, if neither of you have ever messed up, then I was going to say you just aren't trying hard enough.
You know what? You're telling the truth, girl. You are telling the truth. But, you know, I was thinking about a word that I thought about that you said 5 C's. I would give it another C. I think there's a 6th one that kind of engulfs the whole thing to me.
What's that?
As I'm looking at Susan and Hunter and Stan, compassionate.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
We don't. Yeah. Go on. You go ahead.
No, I love that. Thanks, Eunice. That, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful C, compassion.
Mm-hmm. Because I feel that, I see that within there, Susan, without using that word, had that for her dad. It
yeah.
was automatic, right? You say, oh, that's her dad. And then he had to be sick. Not saying that this, you could, because you're trying to set a story, an idea for how we meet in this world. So we do have all these different things when we come to work. You got the military, history of being in the military. Now he's working a civilian job. People do get sick. You know, people do go have bankruptcy, divorces. All these things are experiences that influence our decisions and all our moods and everything, right? So you had to create
yeah.
that. But she had compassion for her dad.
Yeah, definitely.
Period. You know, and I don't think it was something manufactured.
No, I'm definitely not, you know, and maybe that fits into the caring model, but compassion is, I think, something that if we have compassion for others, then we're more understanding
mm-hmm.
and less judgmental when mm-hmm. they do make a mistake. Mm-hmm. Robert, I'm interested to hear, because do you see a difference between the trust that men and women have? And that's something for both of you. Do you see a difference?
I do see a difference. I feel a difference. I get a different when Eunice talks about, and when I think about it, I think about something else. I grew up, you know, during the 50s and 60s and 70s, where men had a role of being unfeeling, quiet types. You know, there were all kinds of words that really limits men's ability to express themselves. But I saw in the 60s and 70s and 80s where there were whole campaigns devoted around women being able to express themselves. And it didn't seem as if, you know, there was an avenue or a way of incorporating men into that that realm. And so I do see a difference, and it's associated with our community and environment, that we're not, the men aren't invited and don't invite themselves into it.
Yeah. Do you see a difference now?
Yeah. You know, but I also see an awareness now That's my where I'm at right now. And myself, you know, I'm aware and I can invite myself or ask for an invitation to be, you know, part of to be trusting. You know, I can feel it. You know, I felt it before, but being in denial, real denial about what I was feeling, I can't feel that. I'm not supposed to feel that. You know, I'm just going to suppress it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and I think we have those lists of here's good things to feel and here's things that we're not allowed to feel.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. when you do that, instead of just thinking that it is, oh, it's just more information for me.
Yep, and sometimes the only way I can express it or I see it being expressed in men is violence. You know, there may be a reason why it was men who were incorporated first in the military. You know, then we see it in sports. We see it in many things. That, you know, how do we unload ourselves? It's in some violent way.
Yeah, you know. Interesting.
You know, that's how I see it. But I think that as we become whole people, men, more whole, there won't be a need such for such.
Or as we recognize what is already there. And that's the thing, is that we keep trying to fill a hole
mm-hmm.
with something that's already there. And as you're saying, you know, how do I express that which is already in here? But I can't, because something is pressing on me,
mm-hmm.
external is pressing on me,
yes.
to not express whatever that is.
Whatever
and
that
however
is.
It might come out. It might come out in various ways, but there's a selective way in which it is encouraged to come out. In fact, it is programmed to come out in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
Just as your parents, as Leah was saying, her dad may say, you have nothing to cry about, or I'll give you something to cry about,
yeah.
because of his own vulnerability
mm-hmm.
that had been suppressed.
Yeah.
That compassion that as Susan had for her dad, which was not just manufactured because it was her dad. It was there. It was there. It was there. Like it was
yeah.
there for you and your dad. When your dad said what he said, he wasn't saying, I don't care about you. I don't feel you. But he could not feel that feeling that he was having because it was covered up by fear. I got to
yeah.
prepare you for this tightness, this protection, this wall
mm-hmm.
that will take you over if
yeah.
you don't be ready. And that was his readiness. And he was giving it to you with care. He was like, I care. But.
Yeah, and all of those experiences make us who we are. So it's not like I resent that
no,
at all. Because,
no.
you know, like I can feel the way I feel. But, you know, I'm a really stoic person now. And probably what he had to say was part of. He made me who I am. And so there's something that a friend of mine said, that if I'm going to blame them for all of the negative things that happen in my life, then I need to credit them with all the positive things that happen in my life as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that when you get to a place of appreciation where you can say, yeah, you know, like that taught me a few things. It taught me some good that I can... I have strength when I need it. Maybe that's part of it. But it also taught me some compassion for my own children. So hopefully those words never passed my lips. You'd have to talk to my kids and
no,
you might have a different
memory. No, not interest, because as you said, that Robert and I have been together for many years, and I don't think I'm the most compassionate being. But yet I feel like I'm very compassionate. Even my anger or my upsetness or my whatever. If you've been married and I've been married to Robert, believe me, they done heard my voice in
yeah.
the house
mm-hmm.
and I was not out there. So I understand too that this compassion that I'm to share with others, as you were saying to me in the book, was that it was already in him. It's just that he couldn't see it. Hunter could not see it. And we talk to each other in a way where we don't see it. Is this someone saying, I'm going to, if I see it, then I found it and I put it there. But no, I see it because it is there, but it's covered up. And in order for me to understand that, I have to understand that mine has been covered up too.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I had to learn, you know, and I still trust people, but I also recognize that there are people that I need to, that there's a saying, get to know somebody and trust them to be who they are.
Yes.
Instead, we get to know someone and we want them to be a certain way. Mm-mm. And when they're not, we cry.
Yes.
And so I really, as I've gotten older, I work at getting to know someone.
Mm-hmm.
And that really means that I'm not going to invite everybody into my home. I will respect, you know, if you've been in out in the world long enough, you know that there are going to be people who will look for your vulnerability and use it against you. And so you trust them to be who they are.
Mm-hmm. At the time. Because, like you said, you do your body scan and you feel, how do I feel in this presence of this person? I'll give you a really good example. Robert, why don't you tell Leah about the experience we had walking Lady, our dog, yesterday.
Oh,
do you remember?
Okay. Yeah, I think so. We were walking down the street. You know, it was a nice, warm, pleasant day. And this young man was approaching us, and he wanted to...
He had earphones on his head, I think, and he had some CDs in his hand. And he was just kind of walking, you know, very kind of freely. It was kind of a narrow sidewalk, so that meant we had to kind of come in a little bit so that he could get past. And our dog, we had to kind of hold her so that she would make sure she's sharing the path too. So what happens as this person approaches us?
Yeah, he wanted to pet Lady, to touch her. And as he put his hand down to touch her, she growled at him, barked at him. You know, and she wouldn't let him touch her, you know. And then, you know, he tried it again, you know, and it didn't happen. Then Eunice asked him, how do you feel?
About the way Lady was treating him.
Right.
You know, like she was growling at him, you know, so like somebody saying hi and you go, rah, I don't want to speak to you, or who you think you are or something.
No. You know, I thought myself, or he would say, well, I'm kind of disappointed, would have been honest, because I wanted to touch her. But he said, oh, didn't mean anything.
I didn't even care.
Is what he said and walked away. Now, I think there was some dishonesty. Not necessarily he was lying to us, but to himself. And his behavior is a pattern that I've recognized in myself, and I've seen other people as well, denying.
Oh, interesting, yeah.
Denying what we feel because we don't want to show our disappointment or weakness or that imagine, you know, I used to sense that vulnerability was a negative thing, you know, rather than being an openness to all things. And so if I visualize vulnerability or rejection and all those things together, then I'm going to try to suppress that feeling because that's what I was taught, suppress it. You know, act like nothing happened and no one will take advantage of you.
But can you take advantage of others?
Yes. Mm-hmm. In fact, that's what he was doing.
Huh.
That was an interesting experience of how, you know, this behavior is everywhere.
Do you think that maybe Lady was picking up something in him as well?
Oh, yes. Because she would not bite him, but she would growl, and she is very intuitive. So even when I sense something, sometimes she'll do things, and I'm like, okay, you need to listen to me. I need you to listen, all right? So she's doing her thing, but regardless of that, I know you're doing you, but you need to listen to me because we've got to do this together. You know, like we're in this together. Wherever we are, we're in this together. I got to take care of you, and I know you're trying to take care of me. So I understand that. But yesterday was interesting because this young man let me know, he says, I didn't care about that dog. You know, I don't care about this dog. I'm going to touch it, but I don't have to care about it. And I can go and intrude upon her space, and I can not be clear about my intentions. In fact, I could have negative intentions, feelings going on all around and about me, but I'm going to go over here and do that because that was done to me. People do that to me, and I've learned how to not care. I'm aloof. I don't care. The way I dress, the way I look, the way I move, it says I don't care. I'm here. I'm strong. I'm okay. I'm all right. I'm free. But one who needs to say all of that is not free.
Yeah.
And so lady picked up on all of this stuff going on, and so I asked him, I'm explaining to him a little bit because Robert wants this boy, this young man, to touch lady. He would like lady to not bark at him. But this young man says, I don't care. I don't care what you feel. I don't care what the dog feels. I don't even care what you're saying to me right now. And walked off, which is fine. I get that. I'm not going to invite him to my home. Like you said, he's not going to come into my home. But on the other hand, I was interested enough in my reaction to what was going on and how we try so hard to guard the outcome, to be sure that the outcome does not make us look weak and exposed.
Yeah. I have two big dogs as well. And there's a thing that if I meet someone and I don't really like them, but my dog really likes them, I'll change my opinion of them.
Mm-hmm.
But if I meet someone and if I like them and my dog doesn't like them,
mm-hmm.
I'm more likely to take my dog's opinion.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
Because my, you know, I don't know if there's other people who are the same thing, but I trust my dog's ability to be able to judge people.
Mm-hmm. And be more sensitive to things that I might blind myself to.
Or
just because, you know, maybe because this person is a priest. You know, I'm going to ignore mm-hmm. certain mm-hmm. actions. Or if this person is a teacher, I'm going to ignore certain things and mm-hmm. allow them, mm-hmm. You know, to a little bit of something.
Mm-hmm. Or latitude.
Latitude. Mm-hmm. While the animal is only aware of what he senses.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't cover it up. He doesn't dress it up. He doesn't, or she doesn't do any of those things. It is what it is.
And I'm thinking maybe this is what we're realizing is that a lot of us is covered up, and we need this book. We need these different things that we are seeking outside of ourselves to uncover this, mm-hmm. to remind us of who we are. And I think we're emerging beyond that too, in a sense that we're also saying, not one more thing do I need to do? Not one more step do I need to take before I come to that realization of that reality right now?
You know, a friend of mine, one of my best friends, is in the movie industry business. So mm-hmm. she works in the technical side, and she does set decorating in the movie industries. And
what is that?
She does set decorating. So when you see
set decorating. Okay.
So she would get the script from the director and from the set designer, and then she has to take all those designs and make it into reality. So she has received Academy Award nominations for some of the set decorating she's done. And in Canada, she received Gemini, which is Canada's equivalent to the Academy Award. So, like, really, really well qualified. And I remember her telling me about 15 years ago that a director sat down with her and said that men who are in the business will come in and say, here's what I do, and just leave it. This is my price. This is what I do. This is what it's going to cost you. Mm-hmm. And that women would come in and say, here's what I do. Here's my price. But if it's not very good, then I'll negotiate. Women didn't trust their own abilities. And I think that, you know, as much mm-hmm. as women can trust our emotions, sometimes that works against us. And that women, I see it in young executive women all the time that are really competent. And in a meeting, their voice isn't as strong. They don't trust their own abilities as much. And so that's another thing that I, one of the reasons someone said to me, why did you have, Susan is the protagonist. So Susan is kind of this really wise mentor for Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, part of the reason was, like, Hunter is really strong and he's brilliant, but I wanted to kind of reverse it a little bit and just show that, you know, here's a woman who trusted her own strengths and abilities, and that's something that I see as well. And I don't know if you see this, Robert and Eunice, but when you see young women, and we're getting better, but a lot of times you have this, and we know what women are called who have strong opinions. If they have, if they speak out, they're called the B word a lot of times. Mm-hmm. Whereas if a man did the same thing, they're just called assertive.
Yes.
So how do you see me, Robert? That's a good one. I like that you to address that, because I have been a B and I have been I've also been not one who did not trust, you know, was looking out all the time saying, hey, Robert.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked about it a lot. Definitely I've talked about it a lot, and he's listened and he's responded over time. So what do you think about that, Robert? How we've moved in that direction?
You know, right now I would describe you as expressive. You know, Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Expressive. I see you as one who is very self-aware, being able to express that self-awareness that I think is very important, you know, being just like you were saying about doing this self or mind body, assessment, you know. Well, being able to do that will direct me in a way that's going to be least harmful for me and my community, my family, my home, while the other way leaves me more open to make an error based upon, you know, what it should be rather than what it is.
Mm.
You know, like you said, Hunter was, you know, he was concerned about paying, you know, he cared about his employees, so he had to have money for them. He had, business, create all these things. He was aware. He was a very caring person, but he wasn't at the point where he was aware of this caring, aware of his assets, his resources, to the point where he could trust that if I do nothing, something still will happen. And whatever that something is, I can be responsible for, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can deal with that. We can work it out. We can work it out, and from there, with the repetition and going over, he becomes more in tune with self.
Mm-hmm.
You know, self awareness is what I'm hearing here.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm feeling.
Yeah, and I really think that women, if we have that ability to be strong and use our voice, and combined with what you talked about, Eunice, which is compassion,
mm-hmm.
I think that then you can use your voice. Because I know in meetings, I've stated something and I haven't been heard, and then the person next to me,
mm-hmm.
who is a man,
mm-hmm.
has heard what I said, mm-hmm. and then he's repeated it as mm-hmm. if it is his idea, mm-hmm. and it's been acknowledged.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, I wouldn't say anything. I wouldn't say
mm-hmm.
yes, and it was just as good an idea as when I said it 5 minutes ago, or however you could word it, and just say, yes, I just mentioned that. I'm glad that you're repeating what I just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Before, when someone would take my idea
mm-hmm.
and act like it was theirs, I wouldn't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm pretty strong about saying, yep, that was it. You know, thank you for repeating what I just said.
Yep.
So I wasn't heard in the meeting, or however you put it.
Mm-hmm.
And teaching women and men to share share their voice and allow men to be vulnerable, which is a strength, and allow women to use their voice and tell their truth and trust their own strength is also a choice. So allowing people to bring their strengths
That is powerful, what you just said.
To the best of their ability.
In a relationship, you have, that's what you get to do. You bring different strengths, and to appreciate the different strengths is so imperative. So when you can trust your strength, and you can trust the strength of another person, another being, because that is essential to a relationship, as you were talking about in terms of even working in a company. There's all these different strengths that people bring, but there's also something that unites them, and that's their beingness, their compassion, their being human, and shared life. It's all shared, and we all have the different gifts, but we respect them, we honor them, we care for them, because that's all part of the sharing. It's all part of this meaning is why we're here. And I think that's really important, because I've experienced that before. You have a conference coming up, a women's conference that you're doing.
Thank you.
Yes, a women's retreat. In
Puna. Punta Cana. Yeah. So I'm really excited about this. So we call it Your Soul Journey Retreat, and it's in the Zen Oasis, which is the newest area in Club Med in Punta Cana. And the reason that we did it there is they've got this wonderful playground that was designed by Cirque du Soleil. And we're working with the instructors from the Cirque du Soleil. We're doing a day where, and it's challenged by choice. So there's a lot of different activities. But if you're willing to trust yourself, you will be able to go up and do the high trapeze.
Like, ooh.
Yeah.
No. Oh, wow.
I can see you doing that.
This is a woman's retreat, and it's from October 15th to the 22nd. So if you're ready to really deep dive and find out all of the positive things that you can bring to the world, by the end of this week, it's a peer-supported group. So we've got some powerful women who have already signed up. So everything from, you know, women who have published 14 books are going to be on it, and another young woman who owns her own salon, so a real different combination of women are going to be on this retreat and really deep dive to the center of their souls and tap into their creativity.
And so it's going to be physical activities mostly, and then it's going to be panel discussions, or what is the retreat going to, what will you be doing? Okay,
we're doing a combination. So it's in the club, it's in the Zen Oasis, which is Club Med. So it's real. We want people to experience this beautiful resort as well. So the morning starts out with yoga, and then we do a couple of hours of workshop. So it's going to be like one of the days is going to be working with the creative, the leaders who are going to help us do a trust activity, which can involve doing the trapeze, and then there's everything from ropes and being able to walk along the wall, and there's lots of fun activities. So if you're not quite ready for the trapeze, we'll do another exercise that you feel safe doing, but really trusting yourself and getting out there a little bit. And then working my good friend Glennis Devine, and she calls herself the cheap juicer because she squeezes everything that you can out of life. So it's finding out your why you do the things that you do, and being able to really move into all that you're capable of being. So if anyone's interested, go to yoursouljourneyretreat.com and just think of Your Soul Journey, but add retreat and no spaces. If you go there, it'll give you everything. So
they can look that up on where your website?
Well, there is a website called yoursouljourneyretreat.com, but if they go to Libra Vedani, it should redirect them there. I'll have to double check and make sure that they have that.
Yes, it's up there. Okay. I think you can get to it from there.
Eva, I'd like to ask you a question.
Leah.
Okay. And it's something that came to my mind just a couple of moments ago, is that all these characters in this book that I just read,
your book,
are they all aspects of the same person? Could they be one person?
That's a great question, Robert. And, you know, a lot of them are based on friends and family members, so it's not all the same people. Susan Cannon is really a combination of two women that I really respect, and one of them is my best friend, Susan Sweeney, who has, she's a beautiful, very direct, and very accomplished woman. And Kate Cannon, who was one of the first people who got me involved in emotional intelligence. So Susan Cannon is kind of a combination of those two wise women.
Okay.
And Hunter is a little bit of me and a little bit of my dad and a little bit of people that I've met throughout the years that kind of messed up, but in a very, you know, I'd like to say innocent way. And then my mom had Alzheimer's, so Harry, the Susan's father, you know, so I could go through all of them. And a lot of them are little snippets of people that are in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of the leadership lessons that I learned are people that I've interviewed over the years.
Okay.
So some really brilliant leaders that I've interviewed, and then a lot of research that I did on trust and emotional intelligence and leadership. So all of that was combined into the characters and all the lessons.
Wow. You've been a joy. Very interesting, intense conversation.
Worth doing again.
I love being on your show. Thank you so much, Eunice and Robert. It's always so much fun.
Well, thank you. I'm glad we're fun. Mm-hmm. Is that, do you think we're fun, Robert?
Yes.
Oh, okay. And thank you so much for writing this book, because I think
thank
this
you.
Is really important, and I think it's useful for the workplace, too. I think it's definitely something that we can use, especially when we're either embarking on a new job, going into a new company. I think it's useful because stuff we carry from where we've been, our previous job experiences, and how we can go in there and be more open, more vulnerable, and being aware of that openness too, and that need necessitates to be more open as we embark on a new one. So thank you so much, Leah Brovedani. And take care.
Have a wonderful
weekend.
Thanks,
Eunice and Robert. I love being on your show. Thanks. Bring me back anytime.
Okay, let me know when you got something else you want to introduce, okay?
I will do. Thank you.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, Robert, that was fun, huh?
Mm-hmm. I feel good.
You feel good?
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'm glad.
I feel good.
Dun-na-na-na-na-na-na.
I know that would.
Dun-na-na-na-na-na-na.
So good.
Dun, dun.
So good.
Dun, I got you. Dun, 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 dun. Are you ready, guy?
I'm more than ready.
Okay.
And I'm feeling good about it.
WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, streaming online at WEFT.org.
Where the opinions you hear are those of the speakers and don't necessarily reflect others at the station. Sounds like a combination of American Ninja Warriors and Nirvana approach. So.
Yeah, we all are commenting
on all these
things.
Hey. Okay, well, what do I got today? I got some American history. I got a little commentary from Gerald Horn on Hamilton, a member of the Manumission Society who wanted to repatriate Africans back to the continent, their continent.